Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Sign up to our loyalty programme and reap the rewards at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Well, I'm joined now by the writer and film producer, Zlata Filipovic, whose childhood diary during the Bosnian War saw her dubbed the Anne Frank of Sarajevo and propelled her to global fame. As a teenager, she moved to Ireland, and this year she is celebrating 30 years of living here. Now a documentary filmmaker, she's here to talk to us through the songs of her life. You're very, very welcome, Zlata.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to me a little bit about your childhood. It's 30 years now since you came here. What was it like growing up in Yugoslavia?
So I was born in 1980, which was the year Tito died. And it was interesting. I was recently in the Museum of Yugoslavia in Belgrade, which is sort of fully dedicated to this moment of his passing. And my mom was pregnant with me at the time he passed, and she was very upset. My parents were very much believing in that whole story of Yugoslavia, very much felt Yugoslav. She was so upset when he passed that they were literally like worried for her pregnancy. And I was kind of walking through this museum going, maybe I wouldn't have even been here. You know, was it for this kind of moment that happened in history at that time? So I grew up in a very peaceful, happy, you know, middle class, you know, living in Sarajevo, the capital of Bosnia. My father was a lawyer, my mom a chemical engineer, you know, went to school, music school, did lots of English, tennis. You know, it's a very kind of like a middle class European, Central European kind of life.
Yeah, and like when even from the Olympics back in 1984, so it was kind of normal, thriving sort of country.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of, you know, we're surrounded by the mountains. This is a kind of a thing about Sarajevo. It's a city in a valley, which made it vulnerable for something that came later on, but it's surrounded by hills and mountains. So there's a lot of like going to the mountains and skiing and, you know.
Yeah, and is there a song or a music moment that sort of captures that pre-war period for you?
Yes, it does. And I'm sure people my age they'll remember it as well. But there was a moment, basically, we weren't a socialist state in a sense of kind of how things were in the Eastern Bloc. Yugoslavia was part of the non-aligned movement. So we were a little bit softer, but we still didn't have MTV right up until kind of 1988-89. So I remember kind of getting a television that my parents got me into my room, and I could sort of tune into things where they would show certain things from MTV. And I became interested in music, and I got the cassette player where I could kind of tape, you know, go from one tape to the other, the press record, the kind of whole complicated. And the song that really reminds me of that time for me was, you know, Madonna's Like a Prayer, because I also was kind of learning English, but I even have a recording of myself that I did
singing
on one of those, singing it really quite phonetically, and or what I perceived to be the phonetic kind of interpretation of the song. So yeah, that one kind of is that pre-war moment for me.
Well, listen, let's have a first listen to Zlata's first song, which is Madonna's Like a Prayer. I remember how controversial the video was,
yes,
as well.
I did not know that. I was 8 and 9. I was just like, this looks great.
One of your friends, it's kind of funny the way life goes. One of your friends also liked Madonna, and she was also writing a diary. Is that when you started writing a diary?
So I'm an only child, and I was very kind of fixated on this older friend who was 3 years older than me. There were two sisters. One was
my
age.
Which is like a huge amount when you're that young.
So she was basically, whatever she did was cool. So if she had that t-shirt, I really wanted that t-shirt. You know, at some point she liked New Kids on the Block. I had to like New Kids on the Block. But she started writing a diary, and I heard about that. And, you know, at that time I'd read The Diary of Adrienne Mole, which is a Sue Townsend book, which I loved. I read The Diary of Anne Frank, and Martina, my friend, had a diary. So I thought, oh, yeah, that seems to be the cool thing you need to do. You need to keep a diary. And that's what I started.
And we'll get to how that diary changed your life and that of your family. But you were sort of capturing then that pre-war period. When the war first came, what were your first memories of it? Was it immediate conflict, or was it something that was kind of far away but coming towards you?
Yeah, I think you kind of always think about conflict as something, and war happens to other people that like live very different lives from ours, that speak different languages or belong to different times. It's kind of like you push it away, like most things, difficult things in life. It happens to other people far from you, spatially, you know, historically. So I just, even when it starts kind of encroaching and coming into your life, you're kind of rejecting that it will actually come into your life. So it was starting to happen in Slovenia and in Croatia and in different parts of Bosnia. And I remember one moment, you know, coming home from school and seeing my dad in a uniform, and I had never seen my dad in a uniform. My dad went to court and wore a suit and a tie. And so it was a real kind of striking moment, like, this is not my dad, and why is he wearing this, and why is there suddenly being given a gun in the house? And then evaporates, and then, you know, number of days, months later, something else happens, and you're like, it keeps coming at you in little things. But it's like, there is a moment now, I know. At the time I didn't, but there is a moment, which is the 4th of April, 1992, when really the gunshots start happening in Sarajevo. A person is killed. Kind of, there's all these people marching for peace who are saying, we don't want this war. There's incredible energy. But a young woman was shot and killed. And you sort of start going, okay, this isn't just something that I can keep away from me in my mind by saying this happens to other people. It's happening now.
I think nearly 1,000 bombs in that city, and that image of, you know, people crisscrossing the city trying to avoid the snipers. I mean, that's something that you and your family and all of your friends experienced.
Yeah, I mean, there were days when over like 900 something bombs would have fallen on the city. Then there were quieter days. I mean, at the beginning, it's really the noise, the kind of, you know, the explosions. And still today, you know, all my friends who know me know when it's kind of like fireworks, they're like, yeah, maybe you go inside. Not that I'll be terribly upset, but it just doesn't feel good. And I think it comes from that sort of sudden kind of noises of the explosions. And yeah, I mean, there was a sniper operating on a bridge that's just in front of my house. You know, we used to just go into the cellar and have to hide there whenever the bombing would begin. But then you also have this kind of crazy adaptation that suddenly it becomes, you know, initially it's like, oh, we can hear some bombing, let's all run to the cellar. And then, you know, as months go on and you're adapting to this kind of life, you're like, well, they seem to be shooting like the northwestern part of the city and we're in the southeastern, so it's okay, you know, like, we'll just wait till it gets closer. We don't have to run, you know, and you kind of, it becomes the sort of the norm for you, and you kind of fall deeper and deeper into it being the norm.
Was there music at that time, you know, because those sounds, you know, are so horrific? I mean, did the dance tape stop? Did Madonna fall away, you know, by into the background?
We had no electricity. So electricity was cut, gas was cut, water was cut. Obviously, there were no shops and food and, you know, all that sort of stuff. We were subsisting on humanitarian aid. But because there was no electricity, the only kind of, you know, things we would hear, we took the battery out of our car and kind of connected that same red thing that I used to record myself singing Madonna on, so that we could kind of listen to the news and gather with some neighbors of ours at 9 p.m. every night and just listen to the news. And there were some songs, occasionally there'll be like maybe an hour here of electricity. There were a lot of songs being written that were kind of songs to give strength and hope and that kind of music, but I wasn't really hearing much of it. So that kind of period is a sort of a silent period in terms of music.
And just, you know, I know there are echoes of it today because there are other children who are learning to adapt to those noises, those sounds, and learning to identify them. Schools were closed during that time. So how did you continue to write and do the diary? Like, I mean, how did this book come about?
Well, it was just a diary that I started when I was about 10. And I had one of those like little notebooks that, you know, had like a cute magnet thing and teddy bears and everything. And it had those pre-described kind of those spaces that you would kind of write. And I just usually would mostly write, everything's okay. Oh, yeah, I had like got an A in maths. Everything's okay. So that was very boring to anyone. Then kind of when the school year began, just before the war, so September 91, I started kind of thinking, okay, I need to kind of apply myself a little bit more to this. Always liked reading and writing. So then I was writing a bit more about my life and the kind of, you know, I was giving a bit more time. I used to cut out pictures out of magazines and just kind of glue them and try and kind of curate my little notebook. And I kept writing, you know, whilst up to a certain kind of Madonna time point, I was writing about music and friends and birthday parties and everything. Suddenly I was writing about whether there's food, there's electricity, who I found out got killed today, you know, who is humanitarian aid going to be delivered? over the fears I had about my mom going, having to go get water in these pumps in the city, you know, friends that left, that I was now the one who is the reason why I started writing a diary, ended up in Slovenia. I missed her and her sister and all my friends and my life terribly. So the diary that recorded my life before, just I continued writing for myself.
But your lives were so shut off in a very, very profound sense. Like, I mean, it's, you know, the city was so vulnerable again because that valley, so you were sort of trapped there. How did you get out? How did you and your family get out?
So this diary that I kept writing, there was a moment in the first summer of war where there was a kind of a call out, does anyone keep a diary? Because Audrey Hepburn was meant to come to Sarajevo and they wanted to present her with a diary. She was a UNICEF Goodwill Ambassador and they wanted to present her with a diary of a child. So I gave sort of excerpts on mine and they collected around the city. Audrey Hepburn never came. That never happened. But a year later, I found out that, you know, it has been decided that the one of all the ones that they picked out that was going to have a little book promotion in the middle of a war in the second summer of the war in 93 was going to be mine. So there was a sort of an actress reading some parts and, you know, it was a little bit reported on Bosnian television. But some Spanish journalist who was staying in the Holiday Inn, which is where all the journalists were staying, wandered in, saw this and went back to Holiday Inn and said, oh, there's a girl and she's kind of speaks English and isn't this mad and it's a diary and isn't this the Anne Frank of Sarajevo suddenly became the label that got stuck, which I really didn't like. And but I understand why it was there. And so then these journalists started coming to my house and interviewing me. And that way, the story of this girl who kept a diary got out into the world.
And it was, you were able to escape the war because you, with your family, because you got a publishing deal, essentially.
Yeah, it was impossible to leave. And it was very hard to kind of deal with that because obviously there were kids who were very badly wounded, people who needed to receive treatment, and they couldn't get out of this city, this perfect circle of siege that Sarajevo was in. But I, because of having decided to copy my friend Martina, you know, 4 years prior and start doodling and gluing pictures and continuing to write, ended up having, you know, assistance from the French publisher who then intervened with the French government and the UN, etc. And we got to leave and we got to be safe and left everyone behind, which was very traumatic.
And you ended up in Paris. And what was that like, kind of being from so shut off in the world, you know, aspiring to get something like MTV to suddenly being the face of MTV?
Yeah, ended up being on this kind of clip of MTV where I was sort of drawing a peace sign in the sand, which was like the kind of the full circle, the full MTV circle. But yeah, there was a strong period of time where, you know, I did not know. When we sort of agreed to this publishing deal, we thought, OK, these guys are just going to help us get, we're going to go to France and we're going to start from scratch like so many migrants and refugees escaping conflict do, like all of our friends did. But instead, it was this very strange experience where it was like you go off and meet Downing Street and go, you know, testifying in front of U.S. Congress. I'm 13, you know, go, you know, meet all these, like, go on these TV shows and radio shows. It's crazy, crazy period. And it's not my personality. I wasn't sort of the stage kind of kid at all. But I did it because I felt like people were interested to hear about Sarajevo and everybody that stayed behind. My friend,
it's a
who,
lot, though, on a young... on a young kid that age. When you you left Paris, this MTV star, and you and your family came to Ireland, did the celebrity travel with you?
No, I see. I never, like, the celebrity was a sort of a moment for a while. And it's funny because there's all these kind of videos and things that you can find of me now that I still kind of can see. But I really just wanted to go to school. I wanted to kind of reinstate as much as possible that I was meant to be on, which is just going to school, having friends, that kind of pre-war diary, just kind of a number of years later. So when I came to Ireland and I went to my secondary school, I started there in transition year, which was just so funny because I was like, really, scones and first aid? Is this the Irish education system? And so, but I had a great time. And I just felt very, for the first time, I think in 95, which is 30 years ago now, when I started that school and I arrived here, I just felt like I could begin to be normal again.
Tell us about your next song, because your next song is sort of connected to that.
Yeah, so it was kind of like, you know, again, we can blame Martina again, who the one who told me about the diary. She said like that Pearl Jam is cool. So I was like, yeah, I suppose let's go do that. So I, around that time, I was very, very much into Pearl Jam.
And you've picked the track Black by Pearl Jam. Let's have a quick listen. There we go. That is Pearl Jam and Black. Zlata, it's so hard to find your identity as a teenager, even more so if you're a young person who's come from another country and you're trying to settle in. How was that for you, you know, kind of in your late teens and early 20s when you're sort of, you know, really sort of getting to know yourself? You know, we're not fully Irish, a long time away or further away from home. How did you deal with that?
I mean, there was a lot of transitions. There was like the pre-war to war, then there was the war to France, then there was the war, you know, France to Ireland. Then I ended up getting a scholarship and going to Oxford University, which was just like, just as I started settling into Ireland, suddenly it was like, okay, Oxford, which is a whole world of its own and has its whole kind of ecosystem that I knew nothing about. And I was 17 when I went there and 20 when I left. So I kind of had to figure out my tribe or my sense of belonging. I think I wanted so much to just sort of like slot back into just like being kind of one of thousands, millions, squillions teenagers, but I just kind of couldn't quite figure it out. And I think in those times, especially during the college years, I kind of found all these slight weird misfits who were like, I was half this and half that, but I grew up here and there. And around that kind of time, I found my little community there. I still figured out the whole kind of, you know, British thing. And I have a lot of, you know, English friends from that time that I kind of understand and got and, you know, infiltrated. But really, my kind of tribe was this kind of like, actually, maybe there is no full sense of belonging that I will ever have.
But and that is one of the basic sort of human connections that we crave, you know, to feel that we belong somewhere. And even any one of those transitions on their own would be challenging enough without all coming together. Is there a piece of music that brings you back to that time, sort of navigating all of those different factors?
Yeah, I mean, it's a piece of music that is from a Bosnian Sarajevo composer that was used in a film, but it also was kind of formed the basis of one of a rock track that was also, you know, before the war that I could kind of hear. But it suddenly kind of opened me up, I guess, this sort of sense of not, you know, fully belonging anywhere, but belonging lots of places and being able to access things and having to be okay with that brought me into this sort of world music, which I really, like, for a long time, really enjoyed. But, you know, this is a piece from called Ederlezi by composer Goran Bregovic.
What does Ederlezi mean?
It's a word in Romani language. So it's a film about the Romani community in Macedonia.
Let's have a quick look. Beautiful. This is Ederlezi. What an absolutely beautiful piece, Zlata. You've had an incredible career as a filmmaker and the amount of topics that you've embraced have been fantastic. But you're also at a stage now, you're a mum now, but you're also looking after your own mum. And I know that has informed your next musical choice. Tell me a little bit about her. A chemical engineer
and with a kind of a potential, could have been an architect as well. I think she was deciding on the kind of the day. She had all the good grades like me. And then she was sitting and going, if I go up the road, I'll join the chemical engineering. Or if I go down the road, I'll do architecture. And she went up the road. But yeah, she's obviously hugely important to me. And so she has been living with Parkinson's for a number of years and kind of being an immigrant makes kind of accentuates that sort of at these moments, that kind of level of sometimes you can feel quite alone, you know, because when you're an immigrant in a different country, you don't exist apart from, like, I'm only 30 years old, which kind of feels nice to say that now, but I'm actually not 30, but I'm only 30 years old in Ireland. Here. I am not, you know, when I go to Sarajevo, I am like 150 years old because I'm somebody's granddaughter and I'm somebody's niece and, you know, but, you know, or kind of cousin or whatever, whereas here it's just me. So that kind of support and level of care that you need when you're kind of...
Just the extent, and you're a single child, so you don't have that extended...
Yeah, you have no cousins, network. You have no aunties, you have no kind of the woman who went to school with your mum, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, there's an organisation that has been very important to us for the last few years called Move for Parkinson's, and this sort of song is played at every one of their Christmas concerts. And it kind of, you know, I did another documentary also about people... carers, you know, family carers as well, and not knowing that, you know, that would be part of my kind of story as well to an extent.
And do you think, Zlata, that it's a bit like writing a book? Do the stories find you, or do you find the stories? Do you?
I don't know. I feel like there's a sort of an openness, and maybe in a kind of a subconscious way, things stick. Like I kind of feel that all the topics that I've sort of dealt with are topics that I've kind of felt I'm really proud of all the work that I've done, the people that I've worked with, and yeah, I mean, it's all of them make sense to me in some sort of weird way of the mishmash that I am.
And you mentioned obviously music. Music is very, very important. Research and just seeing it in real life, the power for music to affect people with Parkinson's and other illnesses. The one you picked is just a brilliant song on its own, but tell us what it is.
Yeah, so it's Something Inside So Strong, which actually, like, you know, often gets sung at the, you know, Move for Parkinson's Christmas concerts. And, you know, just sort of like, if you kind of like want to sort of settle yourself into it, it speaks to, you know, all the things that we all have to find in ourselves to kind of dig deep. And, you know, whether it's this or various other things that happen to all of us. I mean, none of us are immune from the knocks of life.
Well, listen, for your lovely mum, let's listen to Something Inside So Strong.
The higher you build your barriers, the taller I become. The farther you take my rights away, the faster I will run. You can deny me, you can decide to turn your face away. No matter, 'cause there's something inside so strong. I know that I can make it, though you're doing me wrong, so wrong. You thought that my pride was gone. Oh no, something inside so strong.
That's Something Inside So Strong. Zlata Filipovic, the circle of life, you're a mum now yourself. How are you finding parenthood?
Oh, it's fun. It's kind of, it's funny. Like when she was born, I was like, of course you're here. Of course you're meant to be here, in a kind of a real sort of like, you know, I was lucky that it just kind of happened quite like, of course this makes sense. I don't know why I didn't do this earlier. But yeah, she's great. She's
what
six,
age is she now?
She's six and a bit, and, you know, is losing teeth left, right and centre. So it's exciting times.
When you think of how your own childhood was disrupted by war, and, you know, when you think back to that younger version of yourself and capturing all of that joy and then that horror that you experienced, how do you feel about the world that your own daughter is growing up in? And, you know, just thinking of those waves of conflicts in Ukraine and Israel and Gaza elsewhere, you know, as a parent who has experienced a childhood disrupted by war, it's what do you feel?
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, when this child sort of comes into your life, suddenly, like, it's like the time gets expanded, you know, up until my time was, you know, okay, that's another, you know, whatever, another 40, 50 years, depends on how long I live. But, you know, now we're talking about, like, we're going for another, like, potentially 100 years, you know, in terms of what is this world that we're bringing our children into. And there's kind of questions to be asked whether it's worth doing that. And, you know, but I guess I go, you have to just try and see if you can make a good human in this world to keep, you know, the balance of the world on the right side. But, you know, I've always felt very, of course, affected by, you know, even before becoming a mom, just recognizing the suffering, the injustice that was happening to children in different conflicts, you know, after mine. There had been so many. They continue happening. Now I have...
Different countries, different cities.
Yeah. And, you know, I really... You know, even though if the I did another book called Stolen Voices, and it was a collection of young people's writings throughout 20th century. And even if they were writing in 1914 or 2006, or if they're writing today, and the circumstances of their lives are different. What they're writing about is the same. And it's this sort of, you know, very sad choir of voices that are suffering huge injustices. And, you know, I feel that every child should have a carefree childhood, like I'm lucky to be able to offer my own at the moment.
She's probably too young, but does she ask questions about her heritage or your history?
Yeah, I'm trying to kind of keep the language going a bit. She keeps answering in English, not for kind of any major, you know, patriotic reasons so much, but more like here's a culture that you can access. Here are some songs. Here are some jokes that you'll get. Here are some books and different things that you might. I think she's listening to this at the moment. So I'm just going to kind of reinforce the message here, Ella. It's kind of like we have a book, and in it there's a little boy who's going on a scooter around the kind of Sarajevo. So she hasn't been yet, but hopefully we'll go in the next few years.
And just on that, as you said, you're marking 30 years in Ireland. And I was just thinking back, the Ireland that you came to was so, so radically different to the one we're living in now. Like, even if you look at unemployment at that time, pre-Celtic Tiger, the peace process was beginning to, come to that, to 1998. And there were almost, there were very, very few migrants when you came here. And now we look at how much our society has changed. Is that something you're very aware of as a refugee, as someone who came here and who is not Irish, and, you know, because you came from elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, it's been so exciting to have been. I mean, I'm very happy living in Ireland. I don't think I'd kind of at this stage in my life be wanting to live anywhere else. This is home now for many, many reasons. Of course, I feel a super strong affinity. I'm just back from having been in Bosnia for 3 weeks, and there is something that I wasn't in Sarajevo itself.
What's it like when you go home?
It's funny, like in the previous years, you know, whenever I'd go to Sarajevo, I wasn't in Sarajevo this time around, but when I would go to Sarajevo, I would feel like when I'm there, I'm so there, and I kind of forget about Ireland, and then I come out of it. Maybe I'm just sort of able to like disassociate or compartmentalize or whatever it is. Just the sort of way of humor and the way people speak, and, you know, all that kind of stuff is really nice to kind of reconnect with. It's been really an exciting 30 years. I'm kind of realizing, like, me doing this interview now is probably my little marking my 30th anniversary. I would have gone for maybe lunch or dinner, but sure, I came here instead.
You're very welcome here. I wanted to get to your final track because I suppose it speaks to motherhood, to parenthood, but also to childhood. And it was a track that was played, I think, at your wedding. Tell me why you picked this one, which everybody will recognise, by the way.
Yeah, it's obviously you'll recognise it because if you have a kid and you've been watching sort of cartoons, you'll recognise this one. It's a beautiful song. You know, my husband sort of sang it at, you know, a kind of a naming ceremony for a child that's very dear to me as well. And then we also played it at our wedding, but also it gets played in the house as part of watching. But it's about, you know, kind of, there's lots of kind of heavier stuff that I've spoken today, but this is a sort of on the happy note, and it's about friendship and community and making your kind of community with others. So,
and it's a beautiful, beautiful sentiment to complete your life in five songs. Zlata Vilipovic, thank you so much for being with us here today. We didn't say what it is. This is from Toy Story, and everyone will know it. This is You've Got a Friend in Me.
Yeah, you. You got a friend in me. You got a friend in me. You got trouble, and I got them too. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for you. We stick together, see it through.
Email brendan@rte.ie.